It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, what today's Supreme Court ruling on same-sex marriage means for Maine, and a look at regenerative medicine and what it's meant for one man. Those stories in your Maine newscast just ahead. First, this national and world news from NPR. I'm Nora Flaherty with this check at Maine News. When lawmakers return to Augusta on Tuesday, most of their attention will be on the expected veto by Governor Paul DePage of the $6.7 billion two-year state budget. But the Appropriations Committee has acted on dozens of much smaller spending bills that face final votes as well. For example, the bill removing the requirement for a permit to carry a concealed handgun costs more than $230,000 in lost fees. Lewiston Democratic Representative Peggy Rotundo, who co-chairs the committee, says with little money to fund bills, the criteria the panel used was simple.
If you look at the bills, what you will see is that bills that had small price tags got funded. Those that had large price tags got carried over.
Many bills were carried over to next January's session, with hope there will be more funding available next year. The panel has yet to consider dozens of bonding proposals, and Rotundo says there are limited resources to pay for bonds, so many of those proposals may also be carried over to January. The environmental organization Friends of Casco Bay is looking for a new baykeeper to advocate for the body of water. For almost 24 years, Casco Bay's baykeeper was Joe Payne. He retired in January. Executive Director Kathy Ramsdell says a baykeeper is a vital part of the group's mission.
This particular job really is a person who's out in front. They're on the water, they're in meetings, they're speaking with the media.
The group is accepting applications until August 31st. Authorities continue to search for a fugitive who is a suspect in the killing of his ex-girlfriend in the Piscataquis County town of Parkman. A spokesman says state police today parked one of their crime vans in the center of Guilford along Route 15 and passed out flyers to motorists. There have been no confirmed sightings of 38-year-old Robert Burton since June 17th, when he was seen along a snowmobile trail in Guilford. State police continue to describe Burton as armed, dangerous, and desperate. And independent U.S. Senator Angus King has successfully undergone prostate cancer surgery. King's wife, Mary Herman, made the announcement in a statement this afternoon. Herman said her husband, who is 71, is feeling fine after today's surgery and eager to return to work. In weather tonight, showers ending and skies becoming partially clear with late fog in the valleys. Low temperatures in the mid-40s to low 50s north to south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the 70s and breezes along the coast. And on Sunday, rainy and windy with highs near 60. I'm Nora Flaherty. This is Maine Things Considered from MPBN News. I'm Nora Flaherty. Well, another day, another huge decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. Today, the Supreme Court ruled that same-sex couples have a right to marry anywhere in the United States. Gay and lesbian couples already can marry in 36 states, including ours, and the District of Columbia. The court's ruling means the remaining 14 states in the South and Midwest will have to stop enforcing their bans on same-sex marriage. Here in Maine, people celebrated early this afternoon in Bangor. Lise Johansson is the executive director of the advocacy group Equality Maine.
It was the best possible verdict, and it was the right verdict, because that is what our U.S. Constitution does. It protects the rights of all Americans.
Same-sex marriage has been legal in Maine since 2012, and voters approved a bill for legalization. So what will this mean for our state? Zachary Hayden is legal director of the ACLU of Maine. He joins me now to hash that out. Zachary, welcome.
Thanks so much.
So tell me about this case.
This was actually a consolidated case. It was four different cases that the Supreme Court put together to hear, and they involved couples in various states who had been denied access to the freedom to marry, and as a result, they had suffered harm. Many of the states across the country where cases had gone forward since, especially in the last 2 years, since the Windsor decision, the courts had said they have to be allowed to marry. But in these particular cases, the courts, the lower courts, had denied people the freedom to marry. So those cases came up on appeal, and the U.S. Supreme Court heard them all and decided them all as one case, which will be now forever known as Obergefell versus Hodges.
So what does it mean to have suffered harm?
There are a number of harms that people suffer as a result of being denied the freedom to marry. Some of the harms that courts have wrestled with here are the inability for a spouse to care for another spouse when in illness. the inability of a spouse to have survivor benefits when their spouse of the same sex passes away, difficulties raising children and caring for children, difficulties making medical decisions. All of these harms are visited upon people and are not justified according to the Supreme Court today.
So what does this mean for Mainers? For example, a married same-sex couple in Maine wants to move to another state. What does that mean?
Since 2012, same-sex couples have been able to marry in Maine, and that was a decision that came about through a ballot initiative. But it still left open the problem for couples who were married here in Maine and had their marriages legally recognized, but who then traveled to other states that did not have marriage recognition. They traveled to Alabama or to South Carolina or Mississippi. And perhaps their marriages would be recognized, perhaps their marriages would not. And perhaps they would have difficulty taking care of their children or making medical decisions in those places. This case settles that problem for people in Maine. That's the local good news.
So is anything left open here? Are there any, you know, is there anything that can be challenged at this point?
This should settle this dispute. The dispute about whether same-sex couples have the right to marry in this country has now been settled by the U.S. Supreme Court in the same way that the right of mixed-race couples to marry was settled by the U.S. Supreme Court in Loving versus Virginia. And hopefully this will be a decision that will endure forever. I mean, Supreme Court has on occasion revisited its past decisions. The court today noted some of those examples. But hopefully this will be a decision that will endure and will ensure these protections forever.
Well, Zach Hyden is with the ACLU of Maine. Thanks so much for coming in.
It was really a pleasure. Thank you.
And you can hear more of my conversation with Zachary Hyden at news.mpbn.net. A recent decision by fishery regulators in the Danish territory of Greenland is raising concerns for conservationists here in Maine. They're worried Greenland's newly established commercial fishing quota would have a devastating impact on efforts to restore endangered Atlantic salmon to Maine rivers. Tom Porter has our story.
The Atlantic salmon is described by anglers as the king of all game fish.
When I started fishing for Atlantic salmon, I caught that first Atlantic salmon, I gave up everything else.
87-year-old Claude Westfall of Orono smiles as he recalls that day on the Penobscot River more than 60 years ago, soon after he moved to Maine from West Virginia.
You can fish for trout, you know, you can fish for togue, and so you fish for landlocks and so forth, but they in no way match with Atlantic salmon on your line, and you get one on there, and you got fast water, you have got quite a fight.
For 80 years, the first Maine salmon taken from the Penobscot every year was sent to the White House. Westfall would be the last angler to take part in the tradition, which ended in 1992. By that time, returning salmon populations in New England were in dramatic decline. Nowadays, the Penobscot still has the largest population of wild Atlantic salmon in the U.S., but the numbers are low. Last year's count was less than 400. Despite this, there are signs of progress. Here at the site of the old VZ Dam, heavy construction machinery is preparing the ground for a recreation area where anglers and boaters can access the now freely flowing river. The removal of the VZ Dam in 2013 and the Great Works Dam the year before, combined with a new fish lift at Milford a few miles upriver, are enabling more sea-run fish to swim up the Penobscot.
Salmon belong here.
Laura Rose Day is executive director of the Penobscot River Restoration Project, which has led a $64 million effort over the last 11 years to bring Atlantic salmon and other sea-run fish back to the Penobscot in greater numbers. So far this year, more Atlantic salmon have passed through the fish lift than were counted in all of 2014. But it's a fraction of the number needed to ensure survival of the species, she says, and efforts need to be made beyond the mouth of the river.
Success in restoring this river requires a lot of different parties to play important roles, and controlling the take of fish in the ocean is extremely important.
And that's why Laura Rose Day and other conservationists are worried by commercial fishing activity taking place nearly 2,000 miles away in the Arctic waters off Greenland, which is resisting pressure from the US, Canada and the European Union to limit its salmon harvest to, quote, sustainable levels. At a recent summit organised by the North Atlantic Salmon Conservation Organisation, or NASCO, Greenland awarded itself an annual salmon quota of 45 metric tonnes for the next 3 years, more than twice as much as what might have been considered acceptable. Daniel Morris, the US representative at the NASCO summit, believes the salmon quota should be zero, and he's worried about what the effect will be on vulnerable Atlantic salmon populations here in the US.
There will be US origin fish caught, and our salmon stocks are in such a precarious state that if we lose 10, 20, 50, 100 fish to the West Greenland fishery, it's a big deal.
Maine's Marine Resources Commissioner Patrick Kelleher has cited scientific estimates that the Greenland fishery is likely to take away as many as 100 US origin salmon every year, most of which return to Maine. Despite such concerns, many still regard this as a step in the right direction by Greenland, whose fishery was largely unregulated before this year.
The fact is that we're reducing the fishery a lot.
Katrina Kiergaard, with Greenland's Ministry of Fisheries, says the new quota of 45 tonnes is considerably less than the previous harvest, which was officially 57 tonnes, although most observers think the true figure is closer to 90. To reduce the quota below 45, says Kiergaard, would have devastating economic consequences for many of Greenland's 60 or so fishing communities dotted around the huge, sparsely populated island.
Just to make sure that all the settlements in Greenland has the possibility to fish salmon and to sustain their livelihood.
In fact, the 45-ton limit is regarded as pitifully low by the Greenland fishermen, who have called for an annual quota of 1,500 tonnes. They blame environmental pollution in the US rather than their fishing activity as the reason for poor wild salmon numbers in American rivers. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
And finally today, leaders in the field of regenerative medicine are at the MDI Biological Laboratory in Bar Harbor this weekend. They're taking part in Regen 2015. The research symposium, lecture series, and two-week course for graduate students looks at the ways regenerative medicine is giving new hope to people suffering from paralysis and other traumatic injuries. Jay Field has the story of one patient, a paraplegic, and the researcher who's helping him regain some feeling in the lower half of his body.
His keynote address to a room of leading medical researchers is still several hours away, but Dustin Shilcox has rolled his wheelchair up to a table inside the library at the MDI Biological Laboratory to give me a preview. The story begins nearly 5 years ago when Shilcox, who's 30 now, was driving down the freeway in a truck near his home in Green River, Wyoming.
And I had a blowout to a tire, and it sucked me into the median, and I got caught in a cable fencing, and it caused the vehicle to roll over.
Shilcox, who wasn't wearing a seatbelt, was thrown out the window of the truck.
I'm paralyzed from the T5, which is right at your nipple line down. I've got no motor function. It's a total change in your life, you know, not only living out of a wheelchair, because you lose the sensation of your bowel, your bladder, your sexual function, the ability to control your blood pressure, the ability to sweat.
Shilcox also had a traumatic brain injury. He broke his sternum, shattered his elbow, and fractured 4 ribs. Both his lungs collapsed. Doctors put a rod in his back and did other surgeries. And 6 months after the accident, Shilcox finally left the hospital for a rehabilitation facility in Salt Lake City. 18 months later, he found out about a new research trial going on in Louisville, Kentucky.
He actually came down to Louisville, did a few tests to screen him a little bit farther, and then he was what we were looking for, so we called him up.
Dr. Claudia Angeli is the senior researcher at the Human Locomotor Lab, a partnership between the University of Louisville and the Fraser Rehabilitation Institute. In Bar Harbor this weekend, a big focus of the Regen 2015 conference will be recent advances in regenerative medicine, a field focused on stimulating the body's own ability to repair damaged tissues and organs, and one day being able to grow new tissues and organs in a laboratory setting. Claudia Angeli's research gets at the challenge in a slightly different way.
Because we're using the intrinsic properties of the spinal cord even after injury, so we know that below the level of the injury, the spinal cord is still functioning as normal. It's just kind of forgets what it used to do before the injury. So we're making it more aware of all the signals that are coming in, and it starts responding the same way that it used to.
So here is what the remote looks like.
It looks like a pager.
Yeah, yeah. So it's nothing much to it. So there's in my stomach, you can see where the brain box is.
It's a transmitter implanted just beneath his skin that connects to an implant on the lower part of his spinal cord. Shilcox presses the pager-like device up against the bulge above his belt line.
And when I turn it on, that stimulates my spinal cord, and I have different configurations, which allows me to move my left leg or my right leg.
It's called epidural stimulation. Shilcox is one of only 7 people in the world taking part in this experimental treatment. It's helped him regain his bowel, bladder, and sexual functioning.
It's like such an emotional time because when everyone tells you that you're paralyzed and you're never going to be able to move again, and then now to see the things that I'm doing, it's awesome.
We don't know if this is the ultimate cure that everybody's talking about for spinal cord injury, but at least it's returning them to a greater quality of life and a greater health.
Dr. Claudia Angeli and Dustin Shilcox will give the keynote address at the ReGen 2015 conference this evening. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
And checking in on the weather, tonight showers ending and skies becoming partially clear with late fog in the valleys and low temperatures in the mid-40s to low 50s north to south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the 70s and breezes along the coast. And on Sunday, rainy and windy with highs near 60. And that's Main Things Considered for today. Thanks to Mal Leary, A.J. Higgins, Sarah Gatcombe, Eliza Lambert, and Ed Morin. I'm Nora Flaherty.